Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Every team, every topic, everywhere. This is Believe.
Welcome to another episode of Revolution Recap. We're coming to you today after the New England Revolution's 1-0 road win against the listless Atlanta United. Joining me today is Chris Feloukis. Chris, how are you doing?
Hey, man, I'm doing good. Thank you so much. And listless, I mean, you took the words out of my mouth almost, except I probably wouldn't have used that word. But it was a good game as far as the fact that we got 3 points out of it. A little bit boring, but you know what? It's 3 points on the road. Can't complain. I'm pretty happy about that. How about you?
Yeah, I mean, it was a great 3 points for the Revolution. Not the prettiest of games, and it's kind of shocking how far Atlanta has fallen. But we'll talk more about that in a minute. I did want to quickly, at the start of our show, mention the passing of our New England Revolution legend, Paul Mariner. The Revolution wore black armbands tonight in his honor. You know, after an incredible career as a striker that included impressive stints at Plymouth, Ipswich, Arsenal, among others, as well as scoring for England in the World Cup, Paul came to the U.S., where the Revs were lucky enough to get him as an assistant coach alongside head coach Steve Nichol. It is kind of crazy to think the Revolution had two real legends of the game coaching together from 2004 to 2009 during really what was the Revolution's most impressive stretch, where they made it to three straight MLS Cups between 2005 and 2007, and had a fantastic team. Paul then went on to coach at Plymouth in England, and then came back and coached at Toronto. I think he was their GM first before returning to New England as a color commentator, which was really another role that he excelled in. I think we were really lucky to have Paul on Revolution Recap in our first year on the radio back in October 23rd, 2005. He was great. I was still kind of finding my feet back then, and Paul was just a great interviewer, you know, with plenty of patience for my questions. Well, I don't think I can do Paul's career justice the way Frank DeLappa and Julian Cardillo on Revs Confidential podcast and Brad Feldman on the Far Post podcast did this week, both of which you should definitely check out if you haven't already. Paul was always great to chat with and would make time for anyone to talk soccer with. You know, when I did the New American Game radio show, he came on that a few times as well. I'd always hoped and thought that we'd have Paul again on the Revolution Recap podcast, and, you know, very disappointed that we didn't reach out to him sooner to make it happen. And honestly, while I didn't know Paul as well as some did, my interactions with him were always left me knowing and realizing what a special person he was. And learning of his death, you know, hit me pretty hard, despite the fact that I didn't have the closest relationship with him, but did get the chance to talk to him, you know, several times over the years. And, you know, we're lucky enough to have him on Revolution Recap. And I think, you know, as people that cover the Revolution, we were very lucky that Paul was such a big part of the Revolution over the years and that he was able to share his knowledge. I thought his color commentary, you know, over the last few years before Charlie Davies took over was really fantastic and added a lot to the broadcast. And I think, Chris, that was probably, you know, your experience with Paul more than anything else coming in as a Revolution fan. You know, did you have any thoughts on what we saw from, you know, Paul as a color commentator?
Yeah, part of falling back in love with the game of soccer for me was back in 2012 when I really started to fall back in love with the sport again and really get back involved with the Revolution. And a lot of that was just because of listening to Paul Mariner on the broadcasts. The way that he just brought so much life to the game, and it just made everything just feel so comfortable and natural to listen to. It was such a great talent, and it was pretty shocking to learn about his death last Friday. And, you know, my thoughts are just with Brad Feldman and everyone else at the organization that was really close to him, and of course with his family and everything. It's kind of a tragic and jarring loss to the world, more than just the Revolution and football world. But my thoughts are just with everyone.
Yeah, it's a huge loss. And you know, for me, I didn't realize, I knew what a great soccer player he was, but I didn't realize what his reputation really off the field was, where, you know, this was really a guy that was hanging out with rock stars and was, you know, good friends with, you know, Deep Purple and all sorts of, you know, bands out there. And he's actually got an autobiography coming out this fall, which I can't wait to read. I think it's October that it's coming out. And the foreword for it is written by, I think, the lead singer of Deep Purple. So it's just kind of an interesting tidbit of how big and how important he was, not just in the soccer world, but, you know, it's a huge loss, you know, for the Revolution community, because he was such a big part of that, but for so many communities, because he was such a big, amazing, impressive person to so many people. And we will get back briefly to Paul at the end of the show. I actually have a clip from his interview on Revolution Recap 16 years ago that I want to play at the end of the show. But for now, let's jump into the Atlanta game. It was a big win for the Revolution. You know, again, like we said, Atlanta not playing at their best, but we should note that Atlanta hadn't lost a home MLS regular season game all year. So with that, Chris, what was your key takeaway from this one?
You know, it's been a common theme, I guess, recently with the Revolution, that we're making big mistakes that are leading to turnovers and goals for the opposition, or own goals in some cases. But tonight, I feel like there was really no costly mistakes. It was a relatively boring match, but it was also a pretty clean match. And I think that's maybe an understated point from the feedback that I've been seeing on social media and stuff after the match. But yeah, it was no costly mistakes, pretty clean match. I think there was one mistake that I can think of where Andrew Farrell tried to clear the ball and cleared it right into the Atlanta attacker. And it ended up turning into a shot on goal. It was a solid shot, but right at Brad Knight, and didn't really test him too much. And thankfully, that was really it. So there was no costly mistakes. The Revs did not beat themselves tonight. And I think that's a big point.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, there was certainly some shaky plays where, you know, there was a ball over the top that Kubo Torres beat Farrell to, and then Farrell recovered and put pressure on him and ended up being a shot that was, you know, savable. And there were a couple of times where Brad Knighton looked a little bit shaky and, you know, maybe gave up a rebound or didn't, you know, cleanly win a corner kick. But I agree, there were no costly mistakes in this one. And I think some of that might be that Atlanta didn't have the players to capitalize on the mistakes the Revolution did make, or forcing the Revolution into more mistakes. But at the end of the day, it's 3 points on the road, and it's a good result for the Revolution for sure.
Yeah, I mean, there was one notable player that was not on the pitch for Atlanta, and if anyone listened to the broadcast, I think you heard that name about 3,000 times. You know, Joseph Martinez, such a big piece of that Atlanta team, and of course not being there is going to really hurt them. And the attacking trio that Atlanta put out really struggled to really put pressure on the Revolution defense. But still, credit to the Revs, to the defense, midfield and attack. There was no mistakes on their part. And, you know, that's what I'm coming away with looking at, saying, how do they keep this going? Let's get some momentum with that. And, you know, moving forward, we have another match, I think it's Wednesday night against Miami. And it's going to be looking to keep that streak of, you know, no costly errors going.
Yeah, and you should again note that this Atlanta team has been struggling this year, and the fact that Joseph Martinez was out, you know, I don't know what kind of shape Joseph Martinez is in. I think we saw some comments about people, you know, talking about how he necessarily wasn't in the best shape the last time the Revolution played him. But when he is in form, he's an incredible player. I mean, he's one of the best strikers in the league. There's no denying that. I think any team in MLS would want him. So for him not to be on the pitch and, you know, be one of their designated players, that's a huge blow and a huge help to the Revolution. But at the same time, this even with that, this isn't the same dominant Atlanta United team we saw a few years ago that was tearing up the league and, you know, everyone was afraid of. You know, when they had Miguel Almiron, you know, the coaching changes, there's been several of them since then. So it's not a great Atlanta United team. But at the same time, the Revolution had never won in Atlanta. This was a big win for the Revs. It wasn't easy. And they, you know, they had to be pretty mistake-free to get it, because they only scored one goal. So it was great for them to get a shutout, their first shutout since May 29th. The first time they hadn't given up at least two goals since May 29th. And that was really big for the Revolution. And like you said, gives them something to try to carry over into Wednesday. You know, my takeaway is actually kind of admitting I was wrong with some of my previous takeaways, in that the Revolution are capable of playing Buxa and Bo both as strikers together and making it work, because I thought the two of them played really, really well together tonight. It only produced one goal. It should have produced more goals. I think Buxa's finishing was a bit off, but every other aspect of Buxa's game was really good. There was just, you know, early on, I think he had a header that he hit wide. I forget whether it was off a corner kick or some sort of set piece. You know, he had a chance to get a shot off where he slid in and almost scored, but probably should have gotten more power on it. I think he maybe stretched and slipped more than he had to. And there were, you know, a couple other chances that Buxa maybe should have finished, but I thought his effort was great. His work rate was great. His runs were great. His positioning was great. His connection with Bo was great. It's just another one of those games where his finishing could have been a bit better. But it certainly showed to me that Buxa and Bo are capable of playing together as strikers. But what it showed to me was that the problem that we've been seeing, part of the problem is the chemistry of the two of them has gotten better as the season goes along. That certainly makes sense. But I think part of the problem, you know, the real problem we've been seeing when they've put these formations out in the past is when they've played two strikers, they put Carles Gil as a kind of a right winger, right midfielder, instead of keeping him in the center. In this game, they finally kept him in the center, and it produced, you know, great results. Playing that diamond midfield with, you know, three defensive, you know, two-way midfielders back behind Carles Gil, it worked really well. Well, I wouldn't say it worked really well, but it worked well enough, and it allowed, you know, Buxa and Bo to play well up top, and it allowed Carles Gil to combine with them. I don't know if they necessarily got quite enough offense out of out of the fullbacks with Brandon Bae and Dewan Jones. They provided, you know, some width, but they probably need a little bit more from them if this formation is something they play going forward. But it certainly showed to me that Buxa and Bo are capable of playing up top if Carles Gil is still in the center and Bruce Arena finds a way to do that. And he did in this game. The diamond, you know, worked. It didn't work perfectly, but it worked, and it showed that, you know, I think, again, you can't expect it to work perfectly the first time they use it, but it's something that I think if they use more going forward this season, there is potential there.
Yeah, you know, you just ticked off the top three notes that I took away from this match as well. I know my key takeaway was that there's no mistakes, but other than that, you know, I had bigger points on my list, and it was Buxa and Bo looked great together, and they really did, and that's exactly what you're talking about. And Buxa, of course, you know, I think, in my opinion, I think he backed up a lot of the talk that he was talking about, where he wanted to be, he wants to be a starter, he wants to be in the 11, and he's upset when he's not. I think maybe some of that came to fruition where tonight's match, he really, really asserted himself. And what I'm trying to say is Buxa did really well tonight and really tried to back up the case that he should be starting. And I think a lot of that is due to the formation. And the 4-4-2 diamond, it's always been one of my favorite formations. I always go back to the Jay Heaps days when Jay Heaps used to roll that out pretty consistently, specifically in 2014 when you had Jermaine Jones back there as well. And I want to see that going forward, the formation. And getting to see Buxa and Bo specifically work together, so more towards your point, getting to see them work together and grow that chemistry. They played so well together. They knew where each other were all game, and they knew when they needed to drop back and defend or when they needed to push up and try to create space or to pass the ball. It was really awesome to see. Again, to your point, I wish that they had found the net a bit more, but you can't complain with 3 points at the end.
Yeah, and it leaves Bruce Arena with options because you know, I think he didn't necessarily have a good way to play two strikers before, and I think now he found that good way. The question is, you know, when Tejan Buchanan comes back, you're left with a difficult decision because you can't really play a diamond with Tejan Buchanan. If your diamonds don't have wingers, you know, that's the aspect of the diamond. Mm-hmm. So if Tejan Buchanan is back, you're trying to stick with a diamond, you're either playing him at right back, which I don't think you do because I think Brandon Bae has been playing well, or he's on the bench and giving you optionality. But I think it's a good problem to have because, you know, Bruce Arena can go matchup by matchup and decide which formation makes more sense. And he can also rotate by doing this. So it's another option in the arsenal that he didn't necessarily have because the way he was playing a 4-4-2 wasn't working when he was trying to kind of play with a flat 4-4-2 with wingers and two central midfielders. You know, that didn't work. He found something that looks like it could work. It worked pretty well against Atlanta, and it has potential to get better. So I'm excited to see that. I was excited to see the two strikers work. I thought this was, one of Books's best games as a Rev, despite the fact he didn't score. And I agree with you. He backed up his talk midweek, so that's exciting to see.
Yep. And further into the 4-4-2 as well, I wanted to just quickly touch on the midfield. And you had that trio of Polster, Maciel, and Kaptoum. And it was really nice to see how they worked together. And two of them would drop back, and the other one would go up and press in the attack. You start with Polster a lot in the first half, Kaptoum more in the second half. I guess Maciel kind of stayed centrally or defensively. But nice to see the chemistry between those three as well, you know, knowing who's going up, who's attacking, and who's dropping back. There wasn't a lot of miscommunication in the midfield. I thought the midfield maybe could have been a bit more aggressive. But other than that, there was really no issues. And then again, I guess it comes back to my key takeaway of there was no mistakes. And that is definitely including the midfield as well.
Yeah. And I completely agree with all of that. And it's, you know, it's worth mentioning again, like, this isn't something they've done before. So the fact that it worked that well the first time they did it, and again, it wasn't perfect, but it worked well. And it, you know, to me, did enough to show that it's something they can do going forward. I think they should do it again on Wednesday. It's certainly, to me, the formation that they should stick with as long as Tejan Buchanan's not available. And then when Tejan Buchanan comes back, you're left with, you know, are you better off going back to the 4-5-1 and dropping one of the strikers or doing something else? I think that's the complicating factor, is they have a really, really good winger in Tejan Buchanan, and you can't really play this formation with wingers. You have to switch it up. So
if this formation keeps working, I guess you just have to sell Tejan.
Well, and that's the other thing. If there are good offers for Tejan, I guess if you found another formation, that makes it a little bit easier to sell him, or to stomach selling him. But it's an interesting problem to have. And it's not a problem I think the Revolution really had before this game, because they hadn't managed to find a way to make the two strikers really work until now. So, you know, I don't know, a lot to look at going forward based on what we saw in this game, and makes Wednesday very interesting. And, you know, they have a lot of depth at central midfield, as we saw in this game. They were able to bring on Tommy McNamara. They had Scott Caldwell as an option if they needed it. And those are all guys that could slot into this formation and make it work. So,
and even Tristan came on, and I thought he played pretty well, too.
He did, but they kind of switched things up and switched back to the formation they're more familiar with when they did that. So,
right.
But you know, it's good to be able to give different looks to a defense if something's not working too. So, a lot of good coming out of this game, and the functionality and the flexibility that the Revolution now have. With that said, I know both of us kind of had a list of topics we wanted to cover, but I think they're kind of covered by our listener questions. So I'm going to, before we jump into listener questions, I want to talk about our sponsor, but we'll jump right into listener questions after that. And of course, if you've been listening to the podcast, you know we're sponsored now by Galasho Kits. Galasho Kits is the go-to place to bring unique vintage jerseys to your home. The passion for the beautiful game doesn't have borders, and neither does their selection. And if you head to Galasho Kits today, you can get 15% off your order by using the code REVSRECAP. Again, that's REVSRECAP at checkout for 15% off your order at GalashoKits.com. Right now, if you go to Galasho Kits, you might want to grab the 2002 New England Revolution jersey that's still available there, or the 2000 Revolution Windbreaker. You know, as we've talked about in the past, those are becoming even more vintage, as it looks like the Revs are probably going to rebrand in the offseason. So get those before they go away. And with that, I did want to jump into listener questions. Like I said, I think a lot of this covers some of the things we wanted to talk about, so it's easier to just do that than to jump into topics. And the first one that I had up was from Cody Hall on Twitter. He wanted to know what we thought of the formation that has all three DPs on it with enough defensive cover now, and has Buxa hit a stride. In my opinion, in Cody's opinion, he's playing his heart out, and it shows. We talked a bit about both of those things, but Chris, anything else to add?
Yeah, you know, I think that there's a bit of a perception that maybe Buxa has fallen out of form or something like that. And I think maybe that's not really the case. I thought that Buxa had been playing really well all season long. And then Bo got the start. I don't remember what game it was, but Bo got the start over Buxa. Of course, the formation wasn't working. They were forcing that 4-4-2 with Hila wide. Was not getting any results offensively anyways. So they had to keep going back to the 4-3-2-1. And it was either going to be Bo or Buxa. And Bo went in. He got the first start, I think, when they really committed to that formation and really set a precedent and just kind of went off. And he had, you know, five games in a row he scored a goal. He didn't score against Toronto, but I think it was tonight that he scored. So now it's six goals in seven games, I think is what it is. I could be off by one game on that, but that's still very impressive run of form by Gustavo Bo. And how do you take out someone when they're putting up numbers like that? Buxa, I think that it's pretty consistent that he's shown that he doesn't necessarily perform as well coming off the bench. At least that's something that I've been pretty adamant about stating. Maybe it's just something that I'm forcing into my own false reality in my head at this point, and it's not actually true. But to my eye test, I think Buxa doesn't perform as well off the bench, and therefore maybe that's what some of the perception has been, that maybe he hasn't been hitting his stride. And now all of a sudden he is, because he's been getting a couple of starts. Buxa had a great game. I don't think I can say it enough. There was a late play as well. I don't remember what minute it was, where he was tracking back defensively. I think he might have lost possession, or it was a loose pass near him, and he went down and slid, did like a sliding pass, kicked it straight upfield. I think it was like 40-yard pass up to Carlos Heel, who was streaking up there to get on the ball. And it was such a perfectly placed ball on such an odd play. It was really impressive. And there was several times throughout the game where he showed that. Again, the only other piece I think that he maybe needs to work on was the finishing. There was a couple of shots that he had that seemed to go wide or not really test the keeper. Other than that, yeah, I mean, he's playing very well right now, and positionally and mentally as well.
Yeah, I agree. He's been playing, you know, very well other than the finishing. And, you know, he's still got 5 goals this year. He's ninth in the league in goals. That's not that bad. You know, there's a lot of panic about the Revolution strikers. And I get it with Buxa. You know, he's actually second in the league in shots with 46, but only 16 of those have been on target. And yes, that's a worry. At the end of the day, sure, I get it. But his play, especially recently, has been really good. He's, you know, added a lot to this team beyond goals. You know, he got the assist in this game on Bo's goal. And I think he's been playing very well overall, other than the finishing. At the end of the day, there's a lot of panic in some Revs fans about the Revolution's finishing. But you have Gustavo Bo, who's third in the leagues in goals right now. That's a great thing. If you have a striker that's third in the league in goals, you're not doing too bad. And then you have Buxa, who's ninth in the league in goals right now. You don't need one striker to score 20 goals if you have two strikers in the top 10. So I think there's legitimate concern that Buxa's finishing should be better, but, you know, I don't think there's anything to panic about with the Revs offense. I think, you know, if you're concerned with anything, it's the defense, and I think the defense could improve, but I think the offense is creating a lot of chances. Gustavo Bo is on fire. Adam Buxa is playing well, even though, you know, his finishing could improve, but, you know, he's got 5 goals and 8 starts. That's not bad numbers, all things considered. You know, again, you look at the chances he's had and he should have more, but I'm not hitting the panic button on the Revolution strikers anymore at all. I think that the Revolution are in good shape offensively. And, you know, if we're going to talk about issues, it's defensively. And, you know, the Revolution got a shutout in this one, so you can't be too disappointed with that after this game either. You know, we talked about the formation, so I think we've mostly covered what's in this question. But the next question from Cameron on Discord is something I wanted to talk about. And that is, did Kaptoum do enough to solidify a starting position over Maciel? And I guess this is assuming that the Revolution go back to a 4-5-1 where they're playing, you know, you're not playing both of them.
Yeah, did Kaptoum do enough to solidify his position? I mean, I think that's such a hard sell to really, a hard pitch to make based on one performance. I think both Kaptoum and Maciel had a somewhat forgettable, although clean performance. The only thing that I can really remember of notable, of any notability from tonight with Kaptoum was, again, it was late in the game, going down the left wing. It wasn't super late because I think he got subbed off, but he was going down the left wing and he was being pressured by an Atlanta defender. And he did go past him. Alejandro Moreno on the broadcast even mentioned this as well. He didn't even want to take on the defender, and then he did. And then he got past the defender, and instead of trying to take the ball and try to press into towards the net, you know, he was right near the byline. It did take a deflection off the Atlanta player, but even though he had possession and he had some numbers in the box, he didn't even want to try to take it. That was my only real negative or criticism that I have about Kaptoum's play. Otherwise, it was a clean game, if not forgettable.
That's the thing. I think it was a forgettable performance other than the assist. You know, he had a nice secondary assist on the goal. But did he do, I mean, again, I think the Revolution, as long as Tejan are out, are probably going to stick with this formation. And in that case, you're playing both of them. It's not a Captain or Masial. It's both of them, unless McNamara or Caldwell gets a start. And if they do get a start on Wednesday, I think that's probably more rotation than anyone having done something bad. But I agree with how I would describe Captain's performance. Other than the assist, it was forgettable. I don't think he, did anything too bad, but with a guy with his experience, you'd like to see him find a way to get more involved in the game. And he only had 23 touches in the second half, where he played 21 minutes and he had 5 touches. At halftime, he had the least touches on the team with 18. This is an experienced player that you want to have a lot of influence on the game, or at least that's the expectation. And he didn't have that. So, again, not a bad performance, just looking at the numbers, 23 touches, 15 total passes. I think he completed 11 or 12 of them. It just was a forgettable performance. And defensively, he had 2 tackles, but and committed 2 fouls, but he didn't have any interceptions. Polster had 5 interceptions, Masial had 3 interceptions. It was a again a fairly clean game, but not a game in which he wasn't as involved as I'd like to see him.
Yeah, 100%. And Masial as well on that front. I don't have Masial's touch numbers right in front of me, but Captain and Masial both played a clean game, but I would have liked to see them get involved a bit more.
Yeah, and maybe we'll see that as they get more comfortable with the formation. It's not a game where I'd write off either of them. It's also not a game where I'd say they've solidified any spot in the lineup. So we'll see what happens Wednesday. The next question came from Cam on Discord, who asked, will Atlanta United head coach Gabriel Hanze be gone by tomorrow? What do you think, Chris?
Oh, my gosh. It's such a crazy question to ask. No, by tomorrow. I mean, at least the timeline given to me is really short. So, no, I don't think he'll be gone by tomorrow. I don't know what the issue actually is between Gabriel Hanze and Josef Martinez and maybe the whole locker room. I'm not really sure. There's a lot going on right now with Atlanta, and I don't know if it's just Gabriel Hanze. It's such a loaded question. I'm going to say no, and we'll see how that goes. Call me out, DM me if I'm wrong, but no is my answer.
Well, it's funny. I feel like we saw sort of a similar situation play out in Toronto, where Chris Armas, and Josie Altidore, their designated player striker, had a falling out, and he was making Josie Altidore train on a different field. And the end outcome of that was Chris Armas got fired. Toronto wasn't playing up their potential, and it was a pretty quick and swift firing of Chris Armas. You almost feel bad for him because he hasn't been able to play a real home game. Since he was hired as a coach, he never actually got to play a game in Toronto.
But losing 7-2 would also do that to you.
Yes. but Atlanta is doing a little bit better than Toronto. They're in 10th place instead of last place, 14th place. But if Hanze can't figure it out, I can't make it work with Josef Martinez, I think that is going to be the end result, is that he gets let go. Because he's, Josef Martinez is a huge part of Atlanta, as we said earlier. And if the most expensive player on the team isn't happy and the coach isn't getting results, I think the end result is the coach is gone. Will it be by tomorrow? Probably not, but I think that's where this is headed. So we'll see.
I think the dust needs to settle a little bit in Atlanta before any moves are made, but
if he can't mend things with Josef Martinez, I don't see how he stays as coach. I don't know where that goes.
Real quick before we jump into the next one, sorry, I don't mean to cut you off, but I just wanted to say I did look up Masial's stats, and he had 41 touches over 82 minutes. So to my point from the previous question, again, it wasn't a whole lot more than what Captoom had been doing.
Yeah, so a little bit more involved, but still not heavily involved. But at the same time, the Revolution didn't have that much possession in this game too, so there was less opportunity to get on the ball. I think the Revolution had less than 40% possession. I think it was like 39.7 or something at the end of the game. So that was interesting. And one guy who didn't necessarily help with keeping possession in this one was Polster, who finished with 76% passing, which isn't in a vacuum a bad number, but he usually averages close to 90. So for him, that's not a great number.
Well, Atlanta finished with 391 total accurate passes. The Revolution finished with 230. So it's pretty wild to see such disparaging numbers going against you when you're still coming out with a win on the road. But the Revolution got it done.
But it also says something about Atlanta that they had that much possession and still couldn't create many chances.
That says a lot about Atlanta.
So our next question gets at the defense, and it's Thomas Thumb on Twitter. He asks, he says more of a comment, man, we need an upgrade at center back. Chris, what are your thoughts there?
Yeah, I agree. I don't know what we need, because I'm a fan of Farrell's, and I think that he has a lot to provide this back line. And I think Kessler needs to be starting. I think you need to be, if for lack of a better word, grooming him to become the future of the organization at center back. But maybe Farrell is not the partner that Henry Kessler needs. Maybe there's someone else out there. I don't really know what the solution would be. And I know Bruce has hinted at some sort of signing possibly coming in the next week or two. Maybe that's a center back. Maybe it's another attacker. I have no idea. I don't really know, because Bruce hasn't been taking Andrew Farrell off the pitch at all. He's been playing him week in and week out. I can't see Bruce now going out to buy a new center back to replace him. And yet, in my opinion, Henry Kessler is probably, he needs to be the number one, but I think that Andrew Farrell's out there, and I've said this before too, a lot because he has the experience. And he knows how to read the game or how to read the speed of MLS. But Henry Kessler's up to the challenge, and I think he's proven now that, you know, he's adapted to MLS as opposed to being in college. And maybe it's time to, you know, hand the reins of the defense and the back line over to Henry Kessler. Or maybe it's time to just play a 4-4-2 diamond and make sure we have three defensive midfielders out there all the time. I don't know what the solution is, but upgrade at CB, 100%. Yeah, there needs to be some more talent there.
Yeah, I agree with all that. And the other thing I'll add is I thought the Revolution defense looked okay at the beginning of the season, when it was, you know, solidly determined who it was going to be. And then, they weren't perfect, but then Bruce Arena went in and put John Bell in and kept playing John Bell. John Bell did fine, other than a few mistakes, but I didn't think there was a big issue with Kessler and Farrell before that. And then, you know, after Kessler kind of lost his spot and then got his spot back, they haven't really been the same. So I get why Bruce Arena wanted to get John Bell some minutes. I think he probably gave him too many minutes at the expense of Kessler, and I think that hurt the center back pairing and the defensive cohesion. That wasn't that bad at the beginning of the season, but now we are at the point where, you know, the defense doesn't look good enough, and I think they do need to go out and get into center back. But I'm not certain that Kessler and Farrell couldn't work it out to be a decent enough center back pairing for this team. But I think I would feel a lot more comfortable with this defense if there was another experienced center back option back there, in case that doesn't happen. And it was, you know, funny during the broadcast, or interesting during the broadcast, that Marino pointed out at least one time where, you know, that play I talked about earlier where, you know, Kubo Torres on a 40-50 yard pass over the top beat Andrew Farrell, and Farrell recovered, but it was one of those plays where, you know, Farrell probably should have won the initial ball, and Marino kind of pointed out that a guy with the experience of Farrell, you expect to do better in that situation. And I think there's been, you know, a few times in recent weeks where that comment would apply, where Farrell's made kind of a mistake and you'd expect a guy with his experience to do better. We'll see what happens there, but I certainly agree that center back is an area where, you know, the Revolution would be wise to kind of go out and get somebody with experience that can provide some competition there in case Farrell and Kessler don't kind of get back to the form that we saw from them, you know, in the playoffs last year and at times at the beginning of this season. And the next question we get to here comes from Mike Kennedy, who mentions it was actually a much stronger performance in the back four in this one with the shout-out. He loved the clean sheet. Taking nothing away from today's performance, but against better teams, do you guys trust this back line? I think we kind of touched on that. Chris, anything else to add?
I trust the back line to not give up 7 goals. Yeah, it's too inconsistent for me. And, again, maybe it is an upgrade at center back. Back to Thomas Thumb's question too. I think something needs to be done. There needs to be some sort of change for me to actually be more confident and have trust.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, again, it was great to see the Revolution get a shutout. Atlanta's scored 13 goals in 13 games. They're not an offensive juggernaut anymore. They used to be, but they're not anymore. No. So it was great they got a shutout today, but do I trust this backline against better teams? You know, if the Revolution are going to score three goals, I trust this back line to do enough to win. But against good teams, no, I don't know that I do trust this back line enough. Like I said, I think they might be able to work it out and figure it out. And this was, you know, a better performance. But I think a better team, with the way they performed today, even probably would have scored a goal. And the Revs would have left with a tie. I think if a fit Joseph Martinez was playing this game for Atlanta, I don't think the Revolution walk away with a shutout. So, you know, it's worrying, but it's not something that I'm panicking about. But I like we said, I think an upgrade at center back, you know, would certainly help the team. And then Mike also asked the question that we also touched about with, we said Captoom was underwhelming and Martial was okay, but didn't boss the midfield. Did the Revs need to upgrade in the center of the park this summer?
I wouldn't mind an upgrade, I guess, necessarily, but I think the priority has to be in the back line. But you also got to think, where are you upgrading? The only thing I could think of is maybe the Luis Caicedo piece. And is Luis Caicedo maybe going to start playing? Is he going to be any sort of Caicedo that we're used to seeing, you know, circa 2018, whatever year it was that he last played well? We knew that was 2019. And Or is that maybe a player that the Revolution choose to move on from and bring in someone else that is more of an impact player? Bruce did mention that if he's going to bring in any player, it's going to be a player that's going to be meant to make an impact. So I think that means that he's not looking to make a depth signing like an AJ De La Garza or an Earl Edwards Jr. But do you make an upgrade there? Why not? I wouldn't say no. Like, if you're talking about an upgrade at any position, I'm never going to say no to an upgrade. But I don't think that should be priority number one.
Yeah, I agree with you. And this one also goes to, you know, if Tejan gets sold, and I kind of tend to think it's not going to happen until the offseason. But if Tejan gets sold and the Revolution kind of commit to a diamond, then there's more reason to upgrade at central midfield. If they are rotating between a diamond and, you know, a 4-5-1 where they have wingers, then it falls further down my list of needs for the Revolution. Because you look at the central midfield, they have Matt Polster, who's, you know, been playing very well this season, and he solidified his starting spot in the lineup. And then the options to play beside him, they have Martial, you know, if it's a 4-5-1 where they're playing two of them, they have Martial, they have Captoom, they have Scott Caldwell, they have Tommy McNamara, and they have Luis Caicedo, whoever comes back. So it's, in theory, a very deep defensive midfield, and could it be stronger? Absolutely. But if they're only going to be playing two of them a lot of these games, and I do kind of tend to think that that's where it's going to go when Buchanan gets back, then it's hard for me to say, hey, you've got six central midfielders for two spots, let's add a seventh. You know, unless they're going to trade away one of those guys, and I don't know if there's necessarily going to be too much of a market to trade away, you know, some of those guys. So I think the hope is that Captoom continues to improve and has more of an impact. And I think you kind of ride on that and ride on Martial getting better. And then, you know, Tommy McNamara has had a pretty good impact for the Revolution when he's played as well. So, like you said, if you find a really good upgrade, that's a position that can be really influential on a team. So you make it, but I think it's also a hard position to upgrade and find a good player, at this point, given probably what the Rev salary cap restrictions are and everything. And, you know, he's not going to be a designated player. That's a spot where I think if you had an open designated player spot, you could really make an impact by signing somebody good. But, my thoughts are like yours, that center back is the priority. And, you know, it's a very crowded central midfield for the Revolution, especially if Caicedo gets healthy. So it's hard for me to see them adding a seventh player there. And our next one, it comes from David Sibillion, more of a comment. He wanted to give a shout out to Brad Knighton for the clean sheet and bouncing back from a 3-goal game. And I think we should use that to talk about Knighton for a moment, because we haven't really talked about him. Chris, what did you think of his performance in this one?
You know, he wasn't really called on all that much. He did do a pretty decent job of coming out to intercept a couple crosses, you know, showing that he had the confidence to do that. But overall, he was shaky at times, but solid. You know, he didn't let anything in, obviously. He made saves that maybe he didn't even need to make. But then he also, there was one shot that sticks in my head, and maybe it's just because I play goalkeeper. And again, I say it over and over again every time I mention this, that I'm just really bad. So maybe just don't listen to me when I talk about this. But I saw him dive at at a ball that was maybe 10, 15 yards wide of net. And part of me was wondering, did you misread that? Did you think it was going into the net? Why did you dive? Was your body already moving? It was he anticipating the shot to go that direction, and that's why he was already heading that way? I didn't get a replay of it, so I'm not really sure. But part of me was thinking that maybe he was misreading the play and thinking that the ball was actually going somewhere else, and that's a little bit worrisome. But other than that one play of note to me, I thought that he had a very good game. And maybe the only other point is that his distribution was not as good as I think it usually is.
I completely agree with everything you said. He made the saves he needed to make. He kept the shutout, so you have to be happy with that. But there was some shakiness there. There were some times where he, you know, probably should have caught the ball and ended up giving up rebounds. And I think he was maybe a little bit lucky he didn't get punished on some of those. And then I think there was a corner kick where he came out to get the ball and didn't win it very cleanly. But at the end of the day, he got the shutout. It was a much improved performance from the last game. But, you know, still, I think his confidence maybe wasn't where it should be, and there was some shakiness there. But I think him getting a shutout in this game will actually probably help him going forward and help his confidence. Otherwise, I completely agree with your thoughts on that one. The next comment came from Mike D on Twitter, and he asked, where or who is the dagger that finishes opponents off that turns the 1-0 nail biter to a 2-0 cruise to a win? Do we need that, or do we trust this team, unlike years past, to finish off close, low-scoring matches? What do you think, Chris?
I think we need that, and I don't know necessarily what that player is. I would like it to be maybe a Carles Hill or maybe like a Matt Polster-type player, someone coming up from the midfield, finishing off the game late when the attack is really in the box. Maybe a ball pops out, something like that. You need that sort of, you know, last 5 minutes of the game closer, essentially, to really finish games, because the way that we've seen this team perform defensively has really been worrisome. I mean, that's been really the focus of this whole podcast so far today, is that the Revs played a really good game today, but we still have a lot of concerns about the back line. And if you're not closing out games better than, you know, finishing 1-0, that really leaves far too much time, in my opinion, for the opposition to really come back and allow them to get back into the game.
Yeah, I'm with you on this one too. Is the Revs defense isn't good enough to win a lot of games 1-0. They did it this time. But you know, I think this is a team that needs to score more than one goal generally to get 3 points, and they should have the talent as it is. I mean, I think with a guy like Gustavo Bowen and a guy like Carles Hill and a guy like Adam Buxa, your three designated players are all attacking guys, you know, between them, they should be able to make it 2-0. With that said, I think they played, you know, when you look at the formation today, they played a little bit more of a defensive formation, given the, you know, the diamond with three central midfielders that, you know, play kind of more defensively. So, you know, maybe they're kind of playing more for a low scoring win in this one, but I do think going forward, they need to find more offense. Not having Tejan Buchanan hurts. He's a guy that, you know, can take somebody on and cause a lot of damage. We saw Boateng, in the last game, which we didn't have a podcast afterwards, play really well off the bench, and he didn't get to come into this game, I think, because they didn't really fit the formation they were playing. So they have guys that can come in and really kind of help add that second goal. I think they just need to find a way to do it with the players they have now. I don't think we're going to see some big offensive signing come in that's going to, you know, add a second, you know, be that striker that finishes off an extra goal or something like that. I don't think that's coming in this window. So I think it needs to happen with who they have now, and I think they have the talent on the team now to make it happen.
Yep. By the way, we just got a couple of new questions that came in from Discord, and I think that they slot in right now. It would be a good time to ask. I'll present them to you. TSB11 says, was this Bruce admitting that the non-Tejan wingers maybe aren't very good, or simply an attempt to win the center of the park and shield the defense? So I think he's referring, of course, to the formation, the 4-4-2 switch. Sean, what is your takeaway on the formation? Is it the wingers, or is it just shielding the defense?
I think it's both. I mean, I think if Tristan had been playing as well as we hoped he had, he wouldn't have done this. And I think if Teal Bunbury, I mean, Teal Bunbury hasn't had that many opportunities this year, to be fair, but I think if Teal Bunbury had been, you know, playing as well as he had last year or making the impact he had last year, he probably wouldn't have done this. So I think it's both. And I do think that it was helpful to kind of shield the defense more. But at the same time, when you're doing this, you're, you know, asking a lot more out of your fullbacks. And there were times where the fullbacks got caught forward. And yes, having the extra central midfielders helped. But there were a few times where there was a lot of space behind. You know, there's one play in particular that sticks out in my mind. I completely forget which minute it was in, but Brandon Bae got forward in the attack and was kind of jogging back on defense when Atlanta had some numbers forward. And there was a guy on the left wing that was completely open. And for whatever reason, Atlanta didn't pass to him. They passed to a guy on the right who was covered. But that was, you know, just something that stuck out as in this formation, there are some other problems. I mean, again, you know, even when the Revolution have wingers, their fullbacks push forward and that could happen. But you know, when you're playing this formation, you're asking a lot of your fullbacks to add to the offense. So there are some downsides, you know, defensively as well. So I think if, you know, if the wingers other than Tejan had been playing really well, we wouldn't have seen this, but I also think it's a recognition that the Revolution's defense hasn't been playing well and they need a little bit more support and the central midfield gave it to them.
I think that's fair. I agree for the most part with all of that. My only other thought is I think that it's more just because Tejan Buchanan is not there and Bruce really wants to play two attackers up top. And maybe this is another way to play that way. And that's the only other piece, I guess, that I could add to that is my opinion as to maybe why he went to the 4-4-2.
Absolutely true.
Before we move on to the next question, there was another kind of question, I guess, over on Discord that kind of leads into our next scheduled question. So Macho TM, it was more of a forum-based rant thread that he was going off, so I'm going to try to summarize this. Basically, he thinks that the Revolution are struggling right now to beat Atlanta United 2, is what he called it, and wants to know why this team isn't performing very well. And I don't know what to say myself about that, but Sean, do you have a takeaway from that?
Look, I mean, even with a struggling Atlanta, it's not an easy place to go in and play. It's never easy to win on the road in general, but Atlanta's always been particularly difficult for the Revolution. They have a, you know, large fan base. It's a difficult place to play. And the Revolution went in there, got an early lead, and overall kept Atlanta, you know, relatively quiet. They didn't give up too many opportunities. It was a solid road performance. I get that they're missing a lot of players and you'd like to see the Revolution beat them 3-0, but you know, anytime you can go on the road and get a 1-0 win against any opponent, I think that's a really good result. Was it pretty? No. But I, you know, and again, admittedly, Atlanta, it wasn't the best team. They were missing some guys, but a 1-0 result on the road, I'll take that any day. It's something to build on. Like we talked about, it was a new formation for the Revolution that they hadn't played in before. And all things considered, I thought it was, you know, a good enough performance from the Revolution on the road and, you know, not something that I would panic about.
Yep. The only thing I would point out, too, I think the defense maybe for Atlanta was closer to the starting back line as what they would normally field. Of course, Brad Guzan was not there. He is with the U.S. men's national team, as well as George Bello. I think maybe the can start over Guzan, in my opinion, that's maybe an upgrade for Atlanta. The only thing that they don't have is the, you know, the experience that Brad Guzan does bring to that back line. George Bello, of course, they're going to be missing him. But overall, they still fielded a fairly strong back line, and I don't think that we should really be worried about the way that the performance went. And I really like that you pointed out the fact that Atlanta is such a hard place to play in.
Yeah, you can't discount that. I mean, it's also never easy on the road in MLS in general, but Atlanta in particular is very difficult. Our next question came from Twitter, and it was Matthew Korzek. He asked, do our forwards know what a first touch is? Chris, I'll let you take that one.
I'm going to say yes, technically. But I obviously know where this question is trying to go because there's been a lot of sloppy first touches from our attacking half pretty much all season. And also, I mean, you know, this isn't the Premier League. You're not going to see a very pretty first touches all the time. I do think that maybe the Revolution should be getting better first touches, though, overall than what they are performing. Buxa and Bo both seem to take heavy first touches pretty regularly. But I mean, is it that bad? Is it making that much of a difference? The Revs still took 3 points away. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's a harsh question, I think. You know, it's like a harsh comment to make. But I see where Matthew was going with it.
Well, I think the one that stands out in this one was Gustavo Bow. It was a difficult play, but he had a chance to, you know, kind of get around the keeper and score, and he took a difficult touch, and then ended up diving, trying to get a penalty kick. Pretty clear dive, and you know there were a couple of sloppy touches, but overall I thought the forwards played well today. And again, I get where the question's coming from. There were a few notable bad touches, but I thought they played well today, and I thought they've been playing better. And my concern more than the first touch again is that, you know, Buksa probably should have scored a goal or two in this one. But you know, it doesn't matter at the end of the day when the Revolution get a 1-0 win, could cost them in the future. But I'm seeing improvement from him, and I'm seeing improvement in chemistry between the two forwards. So I think it's a harsh comment, like you said. And we're going back to the defense with the next one. James Downing asked on Twitter, did the Revs actually do anything different to not concede 2+ goals tonight, or was it just a toothless, disgruntled Atlanta squad? And then also, do Buksa's comments from earlier this week change your opinion on his lack of clinical finishing? And Chris, I don't know if you want to had a better can sum up those comments, but essentially, I think he said that he, you know, had often played as almost a 10 or on the wing in the past and wasn't necessarily playing as a 9 earlier.
Yeah, he said he was a false 9. Yeah, and yeah. And this has been more of a transition for him, and I think that's something that a lot of Revolution fans, myself included, maybe have not necessarily noticed. All we've really seen from Buksa before joining the Revolution was his highlight package. I don't think anybody that follows the Revolution, maybe except for one or two people that I've seen on Twitter, have ever followed Pogon. I'm not going to try to say the team's name that he came from, but I'm just going to call it Pogon from now. And I mean, I don't think anyone's been watching that team and could understand necessarily the tactics that they deploy week in and week out, where Buksa is normally playing when he was playing for that team, and how different maybe that transition has been here. First of all, MLS is a totally different league than the Polish Ekstraklasa. Again, I'm butchering words, but it's a totally different league. You're going to be asked to do different things, and I guess he's adapted well. I mean, I thought he was supposed to just come in as more of a hold-up striker, and I think that he's been doing a very good job of that. As far as that, Buksa also mentioned that he just doesn't like sitting on the bench. You know, he wants to be in the starting 11, and when the lineup comes out and he's not in the 11, he's not happy with it, but he does respect the coach's decision, which I guess that's the classic footballer's comment when they're not being put in the starting 11 every week. Which is good to see. You know, good to know that Buksa is mature and, you know, a civilized person when it comes to these sort of situations. But yeah, I think to answer James' questions, you know, he had three questions there. I'm going to say yes, yes, and yes. The Revs do anything different to not concede goals? Yes. Was it Atlanta's toothless, disgruntled squad? Yes, it was. And then Buksa's comments, I think a lot of that, you know, he's feeding in and he got very personal on that last, personal for his standard, at least, in that interview. And he really put it out and all out on the pitch tonight. And it really showed. As far as what the Revolution did differently, I think we've covered that time and time again now tonight. But it's, you know, it's a lot of the formational differences, not having Tejan, forcing us to play in a different way and give a different look to Atlanta. But also, you know, Atlanta was not coming with their best attacking foot forward.
Yeah, I agree with all that. And the only thing I'd add is, you know, Buksa's comments make you understand more why, you know, maybe he's not a clinical finisher, but the Revolution still need him to be a clinical finisher. So it's one of those things that you hope he keeps improving on. But, it, you know, like we talked about earlier, I thought every other aspect of his game tonight was really good. So, and if he can give you all that other stuff, and set up Gustavo Bo for a goal or two, maybe you don't care quite as much, but I think at the end of the day, the Revs need him to be a clinical finisher. And, you know, I understand more why he's not, or why he didn't come in that way, but, it's something he needs to keep working on. The next question came from Sean Sweeney, former Revolution reporter, on Twitter, who asked, do you guys agree that the start of, half long balls over the top feel wasted? It's practically telegraphed now. Why not possess? Why give a long ball that 9 times out of 10 turned over within 10 seconds. And just as an example, in this game, the Revolution kicked off to start the second half. They passed it back to, I believe it was Henry Kessler. Kessler booted it forward to the left side where there was a Revolution player, I think, you know, kind of a 50-50 ball he put up there. I think it went out of bounds for a throw-in for Atlanta. I haven't paid that close attention to how the Revolution have done kickoffs. Chris, it sounds like you might have paid more attention than I have. What are your thoughts on this one?
Yeah, I've definitely noticed that it's been a theme. They don't do it every single time they kick off, but I have noticed it happening. I noticed it happened in the last match versus Toronto as well. It actually worked to the Revolution's advantage there, where they, I don't remember the players exactly or the exact play, but I do remember right off kickoff, they booted it right downfield. This time it was to the right side of the pitch, and the left back for Toronto, it took the ball down, but it went straight to a Revolution player. I don't remember who it was that it went to. But I don't get the tactic behind it. Maybe it's just throw the ball up and try to make the other team make a mistake on the back line, and then all of a sudden everyone's out of position and the Revs are ready to attack. But it's not just the Revolution that employ this tactic either. You see it all around football, from MLS to the Premier League to Bundesliga. Wherever you're watching, you see this tactic happen. I mean, it happens when I play my rec league games. It happens everywhere. I don't understand why, but again, I'm just a lonely keeper, so I don't know why anyone does a lot of things that they do.
That's a good question from Sean, pretty technical, and I agree in general. I don't love it. I especially don't love it when the Revolution are playing a 4-4-2 diamond and they don't have wingers. Yep. It's I can understand the thought process a little bit more when you have Tejan Buchanan up there and Tristan up there, and you know they're challenging for a ball, and you know if there's an error, they can make something happen. It I don't know. In a game like this, I'd rather see the Revolution possess it. And in general, I'd rather see the Revolution possess it, but I can justify it more when they're playing with wingers. Yep. But you know, it's a good question, but I think we're not going to see it change.
it's a good point though to bring up the winger fact too, because before, like in the Toronto game, I think Tommy McNamara was playing a wing, which by the way, I'm glad that Tommy Mac did not play as a winger in tonight's match. But
that is something I don't get.
No, I don't get Tom McNamara playing wing, and I don't get the kickoff long balls, but I'm also not a coach.
And Josh Goulet, or Glay, sorry if I'm pronouncing that wrong, on Twitter had more of a comment than a question. No question this game. Loved the podcast and was really quite impressed by the game. Excited to hear you all talk about this game. Thanks, Josh. We appreciate it. And he also said, did you know that something was going on with Joseph Martinez? My God, did they talk about that a lot? Yes, they
was
did.
Was something going on with Joseph Martinez?
I don't know. I mean, yeah. We talked about it a lot too, so I'm sorry.
Alejandro Moreno, he went on and on. And of course, I think he's buddies with Joseph Martinez. So it's a little bit different from his perspective. I would have liked to maybe not have a national broadcast for tonight's match, but that's just listening to the broadcasters. That Joseph Martinez thing, I was a little bit annoyed, I guess, that it went on for so long. And I don't know if it was annoyed is necessarily the right word, but I was just like, all right, enough already. Let's just get on with the game. We understand Gabriel Hines, Joseph Martinez, there's something going on, but it's beating a dead horse, you know, after the 20th time you talk about it. So
yeah, I agree. And I think Jeff Lemieux called out Alejandro Moreno for also making a comment where he was talking about the Revolution defensive work rate and said, oh, if you got Adam Buxa and Gustavo Bo and Carles Heal, they're not going to contribute anything on defense. And you know, Jeff Lemieux called that out as, you know, I mean, it might be true a bit about the strikers, but Carles Heal has a great defensive work rate. So that didn't, I thought Alejandro Moreno did a good job overall and called out some, you know, it was correct to say, you know, like the Revolution should get 3 points out of this game if you look at Atlanta's rosters, things like that. But he was, you know, dead wrong on that one, because Carles Heal has a great defensive work rate, and it's, you know, you're not paying attention if you question that.
100%. And while we're on the Moreno topic real quick, I was hoping that he was going to divulge into a story or something about the time that he was teammates with Brad Knight. And I'm guessing that it was maybe only a year as they overlapped or something like that.
Yeah.
But I wanted to get some sort of juicy story or something out of it. He just breezed past that. He just didn't even acknowledge it. And I was a little disappointed.
His comment was something like, oh, that dish so old. Like, essentially, he brushed it off and made a comment that was essentially that just shows how old he is, which that's not what he said, yep. but it was along those lines.
Yeah, I don't know how good that is or something like that.
Yeah, like that's not a good thing, like implying that that just means he's really old, which yeah. which Brad Knighton is by far the oldest person on the Revs at 36 years old, but but that's not very helpful. Our last question comes from Jake Catanese from the Bent Musket on Twitter. He asked, how convincing was this Revs performance for you guys? 8 wins on the year and only one multi-goal win still against the 10-man Red Bull New York. When does not putting away games late become a concern, if at all? This kind of goes back to that, you know, dagger question. But Chris, how convincing was this win for you? And are you concerned about not putting away games late?
Yeah, I mean, this question really just summarizes a lot of the questions that we've had overall tonight. And yes, I am concerned that we don't end up putting games away when it's late. These one-goal games are a bit too much of a nail biters, in my opinion. Was it a convincing win? Not by any means, because it was not a strong Atlanta team. And on the other hand, I guess you could say maybe it wasn't the strongest Revolution team either. You know, we started Kaptoum and Maciel together. I think that's the first time that they have started together, which was interesting. DeJuan Jones, we didn't even mention him, but he left in, I think it was the 60th minute or something, with what appears to be an injury, but it's all speculation at this point. I don't think anyone has reported on what's been going on. I know Bruce was asked about it, but I don't think he gave an answer. I forget exactly where I was going with that, but it wasn't a convincing win is basically what I'm trying to say. I don't know if you feel any different, but yeah, not a convincing win, and the team needs to start putting the game away.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. It was a good shutout on the road and 3 points, but was it a dominating performance? Absolutely not. But so no, not convincing. And yes, they do need to do more to put teams away and not kind of have to play out at the end of the game. But the one thing I will say is that it wasn't one of those end of the games where they were getting peppered by Atlanta and you were really worried they were going to concede. So I will say that was a good thing that they, you know, they played out the game pretty well. They won corner kicks. They took the ball down and wasted time. You know, there was no dagger, but it also wasn't one of those games where in 90, you know, stoppage time, they're getting peppered by Atlanta and you're freaking out. So that was a plus to me. But, you know, really, really quickly, because we didn't talk about him, what did you think of Mafla's, you know, 19 minutes on the field?
I really liked it. I was impressed. I thought he was very active and very much involved. I didn't see him necessarily making many mistakes. As far as how he was playing the ball, where he was playing it, I can't think of one time that he was really dispossessed or lost the ball. He, like I said, he was very active and he was kind of all over the pitch. I liked seeing that energy out there. I think that's the word that I'm looking for. I know DeJuan Jones brings a ton of energy, but being able to see Mafla get out there and actually provide maybe an equal level of energy to the game that what DeJuan Jones brings, and knowing that maybe Mafla has a better skill set geared towards playing left back, is somewhat encouraging, I guess, because all we've seen so far is, you know, we've heard the nicknames, I guess, that Mafla's called glass legs, and he's always injured, and he seems to be injured all the time as far as the Revolution have had him so far. It's nice to get him on the field and see him being healthy and to see him contributing. I really was pleased by his 19 minutes.
Yeah, I thought he showed was fine. You know, he did a good job in the role. I think the commentators called him out for a foul on the offensive third that probably wasn't necessary. But other than that, I thought he would, you know, did a good job. The most important thing is he seemed to finish the match without getting injured. So, you know, hopefully DeJuan Jones is ready to go on Wednesday. But if not, it was good that, you know, Mafla got in 19 good minutes in this game. You know, part of me was wondering, you know, when Jones went down, if Bruce Arena would go to Boateng instead of Mafla, which would be a really bad sign for Mafla, because Boateng's, you know, would be your offensive option, more of a winger that can play left back if you need him to. And Mafla, in theory, should be the more solid defensive guy. So it was a, you know, a good sign to me that Mafla was the one that came in. Although I guess it would have been, you know, more of a bad sign than this was a good sign if it was Boateng over Mafla, because that would have really shown poorly for him. So, but I agree with you. I thought he did a decent job. Wasn't worried about him back there from his play. So, you know, we'll see if he ends up starting Wednesday and gets more minutes. But I thought he did a, you know, perfectly good job in this game.
And I wanted to give a quick shout out to, I mean, not like they're going to be listening, but, you know, Henry Kessler, I thought that he had such a fantastic game tonight, and the way that he would just casually advance the ball through the midfield several times too. I thought it was fantastic. He drew a foul where, you know, again, we keep talking about Alejandro Moreno. He had more of an impact than anyone else, I feel like, tonight, but Moreno even mentioned it a lot as well, you know, saying, how do you let Henry Kessler get through, get 40 yards upfield and then foul him as well? It was a really good performance by him. I think that playing out of the back with Henry Kessler is something that I'd like to maybe see this team do a bit more. Maybe if you have a less error prone center back pairing with him, but I really am encouraged to see that sort of play from a center back as well.
And then a couple other topics I want to talk about before we wrap things up. It's getting late. There was one comment this week. Bruce Arena sat down with Elizabeth Ojeda to have an interview, and he mentioned that they might sign a player over the next week or two that they've been looking at for 18 months. Chris, what do you think of that? And if you were to speculate, what role is this player going to play?
If I had to speculate, I'm thinking it has to be a defensive player. Although if Bruce says that he's been looking at this player for 18 months, I don't know if necessarily they were looking at center backs 18 months ago as a primary option. They should be looking all over the pitch 18 months ago, but I think a lot of the big problems that the Revolution were having was scoring goals. And I think that makes me think that maybe this is some sort of attacking piece that he's been looking for. And that's my speculation. That's me overthinking and looking way too far into it. But I would have to say that the player that he's bringing in is going to be some sort of attacking or midfield piece that the Revolution maybe don't need. That's going to be a bit crowded up there. I hope that my instincts are wrong and that it's going to be some sort of defender, because that is obviously what the Revolution are looking for.
I'm going to be more optimistic, and I'm going to say I think it's a defender. We've heard Bruce talk a few times now about how last year they only had two real center. They didn't have enough center back depth. So I'm hopefully 18 months ago he still realized they didn't have enough center back depth and was looking at a center back. Yeah. So I'm going to go with that. Quickly, Gold Cup tomorrow, U.S. versus Canada. We're going to see Matt Turner versus Tejan Buchanan, 5 p.m. You excited?
I am so excited, and I'm going to say right now, if either of them do not get the start, which I don't see why either of them would not get the start, but, you know, they have both locked up the next round, so maybe teams have some rotation, but if either of them do not get the start, I'm going to be thoroughly upset. I might break my television. I want to see this matchup so bad, and I saw someone mentioning on Twitter that they wanted to see Buchanan tear up the U.S., but then get totally, stonewalled at the goal by Turner. And that would make me so happy as well, to see both of them do so well and basically control the entire game. That's not going to happen like that. But in one fantasy, that would be a great, entertaining match to watch.
Yeah, to be honest, I'm not completely sold on the U.S. defense on this Gold Cup roster, and it's obviously not the U.S.'s A team. So I think there's an opportunity for Canada to have some luck against them. I could see Canada getting a draw out of this game potentially. Should note that, you know, the two teams are tied on points, but Canada has the tiebreaker. So the U.S. needs to win this game to take the top spot in the group. I honestly haven't looked at the permutations of who that means they'd match up with in the next round, but presumably if they get first place, presumably they'll want to get first place to hopefully play a weaker team. I could be saying something stupid right now, but my assumption is that both teams will, you know, go for it, and it'll be an exciting game to watch.
Yeah, if Mexico wins their match, I forget who they're playing. If Mexico wins their match, which they're expected to, Mexico would face the second seed in the group that U.S. and Canada are in. So you want to win tomorrow night to not face Mexico in a semifinal match. You want to wait till you get to the finals to face Mexico.
Yeah, you want to avoid Mexico as long as humanly possible. That's right. For sure.
This Mexican team, though, it looks weak, and they brought a strong team. They have not been playing well. I don't know how much you've been watching of it, Sean, but I've been watching more Mexico than anything else, actually. I don't know why. But the team itself, they've been underperforming as far as what I would expect them to do, especially considering that they did bring such a strong team.
Oh, I'm actually looking now, and they would face Mexico in the semifinals if they lose this game and Mexico wins their game. They would face, so they don't, that's why they wouldn't want to lose. If they lose this game, they would face either Costa Rica or Jamaica, and if they win this game, they'd face either Costa Rica or Jamaica, both of which would be tough matches. But the benefit is avoiding Mexico in the semifinal, I guess, and waiting to face them in the final. But at least either way, they don't have to face Mexico in the quarterfinal.
Yep, fingers crossed.
And before we end the show, we wanted to remind everybody to follow us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram, all of which are Revolution Recap, so easy enough to find. Be sure to rate and review us on iTunes if you haven't already. You can follow me at Sean L. Donahue. Chris, I know you have a few different social media outlets. Where can people follow you?
Yeah, I'm mostly always on Twitter. It's at Chris Valukis, KrisValukis, or you can follow me at Revs Recap. Oh my goodness, at Revs Revolt. I'm getting all these mixed up. It's getting late. I'm at Revs Revolt, and I post on YouTube as well occasionally. So hoping to get some more out soon.
And we did want to end the show today with a clip from our October 23rd, 2005 show that had Paul Mariner on as a guest. I hosted that one with Walter Silver from the Portuguese Time, who asked Paul about whether he would ever leave New England for a head coaching job elsewhere on MLS. We should note he did leave 4 years later for Plymouth, but I thought the clip was a good one, just, you know, him talking about how much he loved Boston. So we wanted to end with that. We'll play that for you now, and I think we might try to do a Twitter Spaces after the midweek game, so you can follow us on Twitter to know when the next show will be. But we did want to end the show with the clip of Paul Mariner.
After this season, you have an offer to be coaching any place in MLS. Would you break this duo, Steve Nichols and Paul Mariner?
That's a very difficult question, because I came to John Kerr, the Harvard University coach, brought me in here to Boston. I'd only been to Boston as a visitor. I hadn't really been to live. As soon as I came here, I really liked this town. I've lived all over the place in the USA, been all over the place. This town is a very, very special town. To me, it's a little bit like Europe. The architecture, the people, the ocean, the river, what it has to offer, you know, socially, it's just a fantastic place to live. I have a job at the present moment with Steve Nichol that not many people would trade places for. We have a fantastic working relationship. We have the ultimate respect for each other. Do I think I could be a head coach? Absolutely. I'm sure that I could be. But it would have to be a special position to take me away from the position that I'm in now, because I'm having the most fantastic time. And Walter, I hope I'm not stepping anybody's toes, but the photographs that you sent me on the internet absolutely confirms that fact, because Stevie and I on the sideline have a great time, and you capture that in pictures tremendously well. Thank you very much for that.
Without the ones like you who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.